Hi everyone. Welcome to my podcast. This is my first time recording a podcast, so I apologize in advance for all the pauses and random words I add in places, and any stuttering or other kind of interference from my cat or my dog. So my podcast is going to be mostly about the foster to adopt process and what that's like for me, specifically as a human wanting to be a parent and also as part of a same-sex couple. So that's what you're going to be hearing about. My name's Jules, and I hope I can be of some use to you on your journey. I decided to record this because throughout all of my research, I found it hard to find much information from a LGBTQ perspective on the foster to adopt process. So that's what this is about. Thanks. Okay, here I go now for my third attempt at this segment. You're really gonna have to learn how to edit things. So I've turned my phone on silent now, and I'm gonna try not to stutter and say so much, because nobody wants to listen to that. Okay, I would like to talk about what led me to foster adoption. A bit of background, but I'll try to keep it brief and not too dull. My earliest memory of someone telling me about adoption was when I was a kid and I was having a conversation with all my friends. And, you know, we were talking about what are we going to be when we're older? Are we going to get married? How many children are we going to have? Are we going to even have children? And I remember saying to one of my friends, "Oh yeah, I'm going to have 8 children." And they laughed and said to me, "Wow, you're going to get pregnant 8 times?" And I just responded without even thinking about it, "Oh, no, I'm not going to get pregnant, but I'm going to have 8 children." And that was when someone said to me, "Oh, so you're going to adopt children?" And, you know, after that, I went and looked into this. What was this adoption thing? But, you know, I was a kid at the time, and it wasn't any kind of serious conversation. It was more of a childhood curiosity thing. But maybe it was telling me something about what my future had in store for me. I don't know. If you believe in that kind of thing, great. If you don't, it was just a big coincidence. So, that was in my childhood, and then in my late teens, I came to the admission with myself that I was gay, and obviously took on board everything that meant to me, which at the time was no kind of marriage or possibility of having children, and so on. Hard to navigate, but at the same time, you know, I was probably 18, 19, and it's not really the kind of thing an 18, 19-year-old is thinking about too much, is having children in later years. So, I mean, maybe some 18 and 19-year-olds are, but me and my friends weren't really talking about that constantly or anything. So it was just something I kind of was aware of, but pushed to the back of my mind. I do remember there being a TV show called Making Babies the Gay Way, and any British people listening will know the one I'm talking about. I don't know if you had it here in America or not, but that got a very frosty reception from the world, or the world of the UK anyway. Can't speak for anywhere else, but it really, as a gay person, led you to know that this was not an acceptable avenue of exploration. To try and have children as a gay couple. So that was in my mind, and I stayed semi in the closet for quite some time, agonizingly so, and became very hateful towards myself. And I had a lot of internalized homophobia. So I had a struggle, and I could say I'm still having that struggle, but I try to learn how to deal with it now, and I think I'm doing a lot better than I was at that time. So that's my initial childhood and teenage years. Okay, so you've heard about my appalling grasp of biology in school, thinking that you could have 8 children without getting pregnant. As we know, you can, but at the time when I was talking about it, that is not what I meant. I was just kind of dumb. So yeah. Anyway, moving on. So in my young adulthood, well, I'm still fairly young, but in my 20s, I actually found out that I had cancer when I was 26. I had a stage 3 cancer called Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I had to go through 8 months of chemotherapy treatments, which was horrendous to say the least, but I'm not here to talk about that, so I'm not going to bore you with it, other than to tell you that during that time, I had like a temporary menopause, I guess. That's not a medical term. I apologise to doctors everywhere, including my sister. She's a doctor. That's a family joke. I like to tell everyone my sister is a doctor. I'm very proud of her. So yeah, my sister is awesome. And after my cancer, and from a lot that I had read, came to believe that biologically having a child probably wasn't going to happen for me and wasn't going to be in the best interest of anyone involved. So I kind of tried to adjust to that, but at the same time I had gone through a very intense period of changing. Everything that happened during my cancer treatment and afterwards really made me realize how much I'd been wasting my life, and just basically expecting an eternal life, and that wasn't going to happen. And it kind of made me feel a lot more desperate about things. So at the same time as realizing I probably wasn't going to be able to have a child, I also realized just how much I wanted to have a child. And so I'm now 36, and so this is something that's been burning inside of me for about 10 years. And, you know, it starts off as a lower intensity, and as time goes on, it's really become something to deal with. Watching people around you having their children and their families, it makes you very happy for the people that you love and care about and your friends and family, but it's also very, very painful to be around at times. And so I dealt with that for some time, but I didn't meet my wife until a few years ago. And when I met her, we had a conversation in which she told me how much she really didn't want children ever, and she was sick of people trying to tell her that she would want kids once she just turned 30. So when I met her, that was something to think about, because I really felt like I wanted a child. However, I also felt like it was going to be very hard for me, and maybe very hard for the child, because as much as we would like to think the world is a kind and accepting place, it isn't really my experience. So I had began thinking that this wasn't something that was going to happen for me, and I would just have to learn to live with that. And so we went on with our relationship, and when we got married even, there was no plan to have children. She still didn't want to have children. And then she turned 30. I apologise to you, wife, but so far you're unidentified, so that's okay. No one knows who I'm talking about, unless they know us, but then they know that already about you, so it's okay. So yeah, she turned 30, and guess what, guys? She wanted children. Oh, it makes me laugh every time. I love being right about things, so that was fun. And yeah, that's what's led us to where we are now. And where are we now? I hear you all cry. Well, we are in the murky, murky waters of the foster to adopt system. I say murky waters just because there's so much emotion wrapped up in, I mean, just in me personally wanting children, let alone my wife wanting children, the social workers working for the children, the mothers and fathers of the children. There's just so much involved. It's a huge, huge thing, and it's not simple, it's not straightforward, it's painful all the way around, and yet we're doing it, and we're hoping that it's the right thing to do. I'll get onto that a bit later, what I mean by that, but for now, I'll just give you a brief outline of how that process has gone so far. And that's really just been finding an agency who, so I want to say something about the importance for LGBTQ people listening, is this. We live in California, and we're lucky that that's a state in which they say you won't be discriminated against if you want to foster or adopt children. As an LGBTQ person or couple, you are very welcome to. But I want to tell you, there is something to consider here. Don't just go to any agency, because although they legally have to help you, you need to find an agency that you know actually wants to help you. And so that's what the process we went through, because we contacted the county where we live, and they at the time were just transitioning to changing their system over to only doing foster to adopt through agencies. So we couldn't go to the county. So we had to find an agency that we knew was not just towing the line, so to speak, that they actually were actively interested in having us as resource parents. Resource parents is what the term is used for foster parents now. So this is resource parents. And so we found Trinity, actually, through our pastor. She had arranged for a lady, a very nice lady, called Florence to come and speak to our church. And when we went to listen to Florence speak, it was clear that she herself had experience with LGBTQ people. I don't know what in what way, but it was very clear that she was an accepting human being, and that really put us at ease. And so we went to speak. We went for a one-to-one information session with possibly one of the nicest men in the world at the agency we went to, and his name's Carlos, and he is a super nice guy, and he really wants to help you out. And so we had to find an agency that we knew was actually interested in helping LGBTQ people and not just going along with policies and legal requirements. Because the reason this is so important is because they have a stack of papers of people fostering, adopting, foster to adopt, and those intake workers or the social workers who do matching and so on, they're going to look at your file, and they're going to look at many files to find the right match for this child. And if you have an agency in which they don't really want to foster children out to families who are LGBTQ, then it's very easy for them to just overlook your paperwork with no, there's no, we can't phone up and say, well, how many times have you looked at our paperwork in this month? You know, there's no accountability in that respect. So that's one thing I would say is really, really important for LGBTQ people, is to make sure you hear stories from LGBTQ people who have had success with that agency that you're going to go to, because it's possibly one of the most important decisions you're going to make in terms of trying to have a family, is which agency to go with. Okay, and this last bit for today, I'm going to talk about being prepared. And I can't tell you how big the desire is to sing The Lion King, be prepared. But I'm not going to do it because I just don't feel like we know each other well enough yet. So I'm going to save myself that humiliation and I'm not going to do it. So anyway, be prepared. I guess the first thing to mention as an LGBTQ person is this. You know yourself and you know if this applies to you or not. There are people who are out and proud, and that is their life and that is their truth, and they are awesome and I admire them every single day. And then there's people like myself who are out and fairly ashamed about it. And life has its challenges in that respect. So walking into a room full of people who are at foster to adopt parenting classes, and we can discuss those at another time too. Parenting classes, not what you would think, but useful nonetheless. That's another subject. When you have to walk into a room full of strangers, parenting classes, and instantly out yourself to the room, this fills some people, like myself, with sheer fear, anxiety, and dread. I prefer to get the tone of a person before I out myself to them, and obviously in this situation you can't. There's no hiding it. You walk in as a couple, you take the classes as a couple, and everyone knows you're a couple straight away. Now, we were lucky in that most people seemed pretty cool with us, but each week you could go and it could be different people because it's just you just pick up the classes when you have the time to do them. They're on a weeknight. You know, your case might be different. But so each week we would go, there'd be different people there, and it would be a whole new experience of outing. So for me, I was dying a little inside every time I walked into the room. And I just wanted to make you aware that that is something you have to consider when you're going into this, if you are like me and a little bit self-loathing. Okay, so that's that. Another thing to really think about is the massive emotional investment you're putting into this process. And I think, you know, some of that goes without saying, but I don't think I was prepared for how much of an emotional roller coaster, even just going through the paperwork, the parenting classes, and trying to get onto the list would be. And just to clarify that, we got onto the list literally today. So we started this process in October last year. We had a couple of delays because I had to travel back to the UK three times this year for some family things. So we had some delays in the classes, but other than that, it's taken us a pretty long time. And I did not realize when setting out the emotional roller coaster that we would be on. And it's an emotional roller coaster. Every class that you go to will address an issue about the terrible things that kids will go through in this process. And that's not saying necessarily the things that's been done to them or anything like that, although it can definitely relate to that. But it's also just knowing that, you know, by the end of it, you know that you're so desperate to get a phone call, but getting a phone call means a terrible, sad tragedy for another group of people and even that child that you're getting called about. And I think initially you set out just thinking of, oh, I want a baby, or I want a toddler, or I want a teenager, or whoever it is you decide that your home is ready to accept. That's how you start off the journey, just blind optimism. And you very quickly realize this is a very real and very tragic scenario, and it's a massive emotional investment. So I would say if you are in any way unsure, I wouldn't even start the process yet. Maybe go to an information meeting, but personally I wouldn't even start the process yet. Okay, the next thing, moving on from that, talking about how difficult learning about foster to adopt is, I'll move on to guilt, because you are going to feel a lot of guilt throughout the process. I probably will do an entire podcast on this because that is how much it affects the whole process. But from things, just to touch on it briefly, from things such as guilt that you're hoping for a child means that someone's child is being taken from them, whether justified or not, who am I to decide that? I am no one to decide that. And so to me, that plays very heavily on my heart. And then you'll feel guilt when you have to fill in a form saying which children you're willing to accept. It wasn't a problem for us so much on diversity or gender or anything like that. We are very open to those things. But when you get to a list of medical things that you're able to deal with, or age ranges, you know, you're going to feel like a shit, basically. And, you know, I don't know that we're not shits. I haven't decided yet. I think it's a very difficult issue and I feel terrible about it. And to the point where it's had me doubting the whole thing. Because it's just terrible to have to tick boxes to decide if you're willing to even take a phone call about these children. And we kept our net very wide, and so there weren't even many limitations on our form, but I feel terrible about the ones that there are. So you can prepare to feel pretty guilty, pretty like a terrible human. And if you, like me, do a lot of research, you're going to read articles on the internet, and you're going to hear terrible stories about poor children who have been adopted, who didn't want that life, who shouldn't have been taken from their parents in the first place, who, you know, children of a different ethnic origin to the adoptive parents, and all of those kind of painful things are going to really have you questioning the whole thing. So be prepared for the guilt. And lastly, maybe like this podcast, be prepared for the long drawn out process of it all, because, you know, they'll tell you that it can go as quick as 3 months, but really you would have to be free and able to attend every single training as they happen, which is really hard to do because we have lives and jobs and everything else. And then also the last thing is you would have to be really, really super lucky that states where you've lived in the last 5 years process all your background checks very quickly, and they don't. So that was something we found out. My wife's background checks took a long time to come through, despite the fact that she is a social worker and has already had all of those background checks. It doesn't matter who you are, they're going to do the checks and they're going to take a long time. And so you're going to go to the information meeting, you're going to be so excited coming out of that information meeting, or maybe that makes you decide it's not for you. That's good too. It's best to know where you stand early on in the process. But if you do decide it's for you, you're going to come out so excited and you're very quickly going to become sad and frustrated with how long it all takes, because having a nursery ready to receive a child for a person who's wanted a child for so long is incredibly difficult to walk past every single day and deal with. So yeah, be prepared, everybody. That's what you've got to be prepared about. And let me know if you have any questions or topics you'd like me to talk about. And if not, I'll probably just expand on one of those things I've already mentioned. Awesome. Thanks so much. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.